So, Doc, let me try kicking this off in a different direction, one that would be really productive right now. To give you, a sense of context into one of the ways I view our, I don't know what you would call it, exploration. And I've done this before. Actually, it's my MO. It's how I do my work. When I'm successful, if you notice, I usually have, there's usually an and. There's usually someone else. And it's because, how to put it? Maybe this is, I actually don't think I've ever written this down. I'm not even sure I've ever thought about it. But it's true. It's observable that when I make something that actually flies, it was a combination of my mind and somebody else's mind. And God, there are so many examples. Podcasting with Adam Curry. First of all, the original idea came from him. It didn't come from me. So I wouldn't have done that without that, But more important was that it took a few years of coming back to it. It wasn't just Adam. Let's be clear about that. It was also Chris Lydon. And it was also the folks at Harvard. In sequence. And finally, all that experience gave me enough to have the guts to do it myself. And then back to Adam. And then off to explosion. And so that's one of them. They all are, really. So let me just try to say what is actually happening here. The podcasts are important because for whatever reason, we both are getting something out of it. And that's creating what you call a conversation. And it isn't just markets that are conversations, it's products that are conversations. And who is the conversation between? Well, the person creating the product and the person using the product. That's the conversation. My goal, and maybe it's not true, it is true of every kind of product, but it's especially true of my kind of product because the way where the product is entirely intellectual, entirely 100% intellectual. There is no physical substance to the product, yet it requires lots of work and lots of experimentation, a lot of trial and error, and a lot of listening. And tea leaf reading, because people often, you just sort of watch to see what they do. And that guides you. It gives you theories. And you try ideas out. And they, if you really hit it solid, they tell you. They tell you. And that is probably the biggest rush. I remember on Radio Userland, I was trying to come up with the user interface for the product, and it was a tricky little nut to crack because this was a product that was very diverse. It was both a blogging tool like a WordPress, and it was a feed reader like Feedly. Although not like Feedly, it was a different model. It's funny how my blogging tool, the radio blogging tool was the compromise blogging model. It was not the one I loved. I would never actually use radio myself for blogging. How about that? It's kind of a clue, isn't it? But the aggregator in radio was unique, and it had to be because there was no prior art here. This was the first one, and there was my Netscape. It did come before ours, but to the extent that it formed prior art, I just rejected it. It was like, no, that isn't how you read news. You know, I had, I forget where, but there, I had been in a place that had a teletype machine. It was probably the New York Public Interest Research Group in Midtown. No, Upper West Side, I think it was. I volunteered there as a high school student. And I think that was the place. There could have been it was one of the various underground newspapers I hung out at, too. Who knows? But I had been in a room that had a teletype in it and had experienced what that was like. And I honestly don't, and this perfect segue into where I wanted to go with this, by the way. I don't think that any of the people who developed aggregators, they have theoretical ideas about what people want to do to read news, but they're not personal, you know? They don't have convictions about how these things should work based on having given any consideration whatsoever to other ways of it working. And it's just sort of, here it is, this is the model. And I think that's true also of the format that WordPress uses for blogging and Blogger and all the predecessors. And the one different one in all of this mess, in both cases, were mine. And I would argue that this is this case. And now this is what I'm looking for here and why you are a good fit. And I don't want to put down the other people who use a little outliner. In fact, yesterday I got an email from Ted Howard, who is like somebody I've never met face to face. I would like to, who has actually been one of my longest term collaborators without actually doing a whole lot of collaborating. He is keeping the Frontier code base running on the Mac. That's what Ted is doing. If it weren't for Ted, I would have had to have stopped using Frontier years ago. And along with it, I mean, I've got some great DevOps tools and editorial tools here that I've never released. They're just because I got so tired of releasing shit to people who didn't understand or didn't care or never gave me feedback or just stole the ideas and never gave me any feedback. I just got so tired, I just didn't feel any incentive. So, and not only that, nobody else was using Frontier. I was the only one. And that was a hard sell. So fuck it, I don't want to sell anybody. I just made the tools that I want to use. And my God, these are the best. They really are far ahead of what anybody else has. You know, I'm doing the work of a lot of developers, not just one. You know, serious development efforts have whole DevOps functions. And mine is completely automated. The deploying of my stuff is 100% automatic. Anyway, I digress. For that, I can give myself my own feedback. How about that? Why? Because I'm straight in the target market because I'm only making software for myself. Obviously, I'm the perfect person to talk to. I represent the entire market. It really has been a lot of fun. It still is. I think you can tell it is a lot of fun for me. Anyway, Ted's a wonderful guy, and he sent me a beautiful idea that is actually right on the path that I want to go down. And that's also on my blog, too, by the way. Intermixed between all the political mishigas is a set of pieces that I've written that actually have stirred some people up. And it, not that I didn't know at first that they would, but I wasn't writing it for them. I was amazed at myself that I had disconnected from, I was no longer being subjective about RSS. I was trying to be brutally objective and to figure out to what extent is RSS the problem? It turns out, to a very large extent, it is the problem. It's as much of a problem in the ecosystem that my blogging exists in as Twitter is, as Facebook is, as Google Reader is to this day. That that RSS is has a model for what blogging is about, how it should work. And if you don't fit into the model, they don't do a very good job with your stuff. In fact, they do a terrible job. And so anyway, Ted sent me some feedback on this. His feedback was right on, and it's a perfect example of what I'm getting at, is that his is a different perspective when it comes to my blog, and yours is a different perspective than mine when it comes to outlining. And the perspective that I'm hearing a lot from on all of this stuff are the guys who write the aggregators that don't actually think about what if. They just do it because it's the way it's always been done. So when and those people, they can't help me, because they're just going to steer me into the way everybody else does everything. And I was so unaware of this that I was actually trying to fit in there and not realizing that they were going to push me into a place where they were pushing everybody else. But in my heart, I know that those other people are just not being creative enough, and they're stuck. They're not going to go anywhere. So that's why I like working with you. Because you actually will let me take you places. But right now my problem is this. I have so many places I could take an outliner user. The problem isn't all the cool shit that I have to throw at this problem. The problem is I need a thread with an actual real user, the kind of person that I know very well because I used to create software for them. You know, we had personal connections with users back in the 80s, you know? I mean, people must think that, well, you know, people never had a chance to actually meet their users, you know, because there was no real online network at the time. We had one, but our users generally didn't have one yet. And it's simply not true, because we created ways to hear, to connect and listen to and ask questions of our users. We weren't idle about it. We were proactive about it. And so we had a bunch of mechanisms. And in a lot of ways, I know those users way better than I know any of the users that I have today or have had in the last 15, 20 years, for that matter. You know, a lot of the users that I got to know were people who hated me. Not to say that there weren't people that loved my stuff, but they couldn't get in over the din. You know, it was like just this massive amount of noise around me. So that settled down. And aside from that, you and I, and how do we connect with those? We went to Comdex. In fact, as you told me, I didn't know it, but the first time we met was at Comdex in, I think you said, Atlanta. And I remember it very well. We were in the basement. So it wasn't like a majestic place that we were at. We were in a very low ceiling place with, it was very crowded, but it was great. We were meeting people like Doc Searles. You know, so we would go to Macworld Expo and I don't know, not that many different places. SoftCon, I think there was a thing called SoftCon for a while. And you could always see a think tank user coming down the aisle to the booth because these were people who walked with purpose. That's the way I saw it. Said, oh, that guy's coming to see us. And yep, sure enough. Yeah, probably it's just, there is a certain type of person. And it was, you know, people say shit like this, but in my case, it truly was a privilege to make software for these people. These were people who really, you know, to use this stuff, you had to be somewhat aware of how you think. And that level of self-awareness, it's extremely rare that people are inquiring of themselves to understand their own thought processes so that they could even imagine that there could possibly be a piece of software that gives them a new surface to manipulate that actually fits in better than anything they've ever had in the physical world. You know, outlining is that kind of a breakthrough. It really is. It's We called it an idea processor, and I still don't believe that that was overblown. I still think that was accurate. That's exactly what you're doing, you know. Processing might not have been the best choice of words because, you know, why? But there were word processors. That's why it was idea processor from word processor. Now, processing is the right word. For me, what it means is that if I get an idea, I actually can do something with it. That's the big deal. Otherwise, I'm like you. I'm way too fucking scattered, and it gets worse all the time. It just doesn't get better. You know, what I am much better at, though, and maybe this is true of all people as they get older, is I'm much better at making a record and having it be systematic. And so that I have a process to leave myself a clue. It's like that movie Memento. Do you ever see that one? Where the guy literally had no medium-term memory. He only had short-term memory. So he was involved in the middle of a huge, like, murder plot, but he had no idea what the fuck was going on. So he left messages to himself in tattoos on his own body. It was a hard movie to watch, I have to say, but it was brilliant. And the guy who did it went on to do other movies, that none of which I think were as brilliant. I don't remember who it was. I think he also did Inception, which was a fine movie, but had one good gimmick, and that was about it. Also had a great cast. I'm trying to remember the girl from Juno. Ellen Page, I think is her name. I mean, her best was Juno. I mean, Juno was whatever. People didn't like Juno. It was not politically correct. Until they told me that, I didn't realize it. It was not politically correct. But it was still an adorable movie. Anyway, so, you know, I blew right by those people, Doc. That was the thing, you know? And I don't have regrets about doing it. I had to do it because they weren't a big enough market to support even the kind of company that we had already built, because I was taking on venture capital money. And, it was earlier, so the philosophy of the investors was different than it would be today. First of all, they didn't give you as much money as they do to companies these days. And you had, like, no runway to get to profitability. And so you had to get to profitability in your very first round. And we did, and then we felt it was feast or famine, basically. Our curve was, like, this huge roller coaster of extremes. Either we're like incredible pipe fill, totally selling out, like can't believe the amount of money that's coming in, to oh, there's nothing here. And oh, I don't have the money to make payroll and blah blah blah. And so anyway, we didn't have a choice. We had to make money or go away. It was the only way. And the brilliant people that I loved so much, there weren't enough of them. And so we had to find other people that could use what we had developed. And I remember I was telling you at the outset that there was always someone else. You know, in this case, it was Guy Kawasaki. And he's not happy about this. Of course, I am happy. One day I went down to Apple. We were about to ship a new release of Think Tank, only it was something that we had poured. We just basically... It was a Hail Mary play, Doc. I mean, our company really was about out of business. And so what I did was we took everything we had half developed and threw it into the product. I mean, half developed. It worked. The stuff worked. It's just like we didn't really know if anybody would have a use for it. We just said, fuck it. This is our last shot. We're just going to leave it in. We're not going to comment it out. Just put it in. We'll document it, okay? And so we had this half-assed slideshow feature. And we didn't understand what it was for. We just said, you know, we could do a slideshow out of these outlines. Let's give it a try. So went into a demo to Apple, and the guy, we were dealing with Guy Kawasaki, who was the lead evangelist, and Guy was really great for us, a champion. You know, they talk about champions. Guy, that was Guy, man. And he talk about outliner. I mean, he is an outliner dude, natural-born outliner, NBO. And he said to me, I don't remember the exact words. He said, if you could put a box around this and a line here and some bullet things here, I could sell 100,000 of these or something. I mean, it wasn't that big a number. And I said, well, yeah, I think we could do that. I don't think that would be a problem. So we went back and did it. And it saved the company, Doc. That was more. And it was just win-wins everywhere with that product. And so there you go, right? In fact, outlining in the first place for me was an idea that I got from a guy named Gary Savitsky. And this is when I was a grad student at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And I was, you know, getting a master's degree in computer science, and I was a smoker, and back then you could smoke in the buildings, but you couldn't smoke in the computer room. So I would take a break when I was programming and go out and have a cigarette. And Gary was also a smoker, so he and I did a lot of sort of like talking about things we had been thinking about or trying out or whatever. And he told me about how the Lisp program editor worked. And I thought, man, that's a really good idea. I don't know why my editor doesn't work that way. So that's what I did. I said, oh, well, let me do this. I'm going to figure this out. I'd been looking for an idea to do as a research project as a grad student. I wanted to do something amazing because these computers were amazing. And this was it. And it was basically a program editor and an outliner. I mean, not exactly, because we didn't have exactly the same kind of computers. This was on Unix, the same kind of terminals we use on Unix these days, except they were actual physical terminals, not, you know, pieces of software that run on Macs. And then it was another person, one of my roommates, Pete Vanderveer. I lived in a house with 9 other roommates, and I did a demo of the software I had developed to, and all my, none of them were computer science guys. They were, Pete was some biology degree. I don't remember exactly what degree, chemistry, biology. I don't remember. But it wasn't computer science. None of my roommates were computer science students. And he said, that's great. I'd like to use it. I said, but Pete, you can't use it. And then I said to myself, why not? Why can't he use it? And there was a reason why he couldn't use it. I mean, it literally would not have responded to him. But it wasn't that big a distance to get to something that he could use, and that was an outliner. And, you know, my life changed in both of those moments, those two people. Gary and Pete pushed me in a little bit of a direction, and it gave me an idea. And I don't know if every creative person works this way, but this is the way I work. And so that's where the value is in all this, is that I don't need a nerd's idea of where RSS should go. I'm not asking you where RSS should go. I don't want you to tell me because I want to figure that one out, right? But what I want to do is create a way for you to read what I write that is the way I want you to read it. And email is not it, and the web is not it, and RSS for sure is not it, but I think I know what it is, actually. I think I know how to do it. And then the second part of that is, you know, 6 months after or a year after I have it all smoothed out, and for me, I'd like to, again, try to have other people use it. I have stopped doing that for many years. It's time to go back to that. If I can find people who are ready and able to be part of this. I know you are, because maybe it's just because you were around in the 80s and you beta tested software then. It could be that. But I don't think that's what it is. I think you and I have a bond that, you know, an understanding that we can't even put into words. But yet it seems to work. Our minds seem to connect. Now, on the other hand, now that I know Customer Commons is what you're about, let's talk about how to make that work. You know, I mean, I'm available to help with that. I want to do that. So, but that's something that I don't even begin to know how to talk about. And that's where you have to help me. So anyway, that's my podcast for today. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.